Looking back, it's great, but at the time we were just trying to make jokes. And I was sort of the poop joke guy out of all of them, if I'm being honest.
Welcome to Story and Craft. Now, here's your host, Mark Preston.
All right, welcome back, my friend. Good to have you. Glad that you have joined me once again for some more conversational mischief. And if this is your very first episode, the first time you're joining Story and Craft, I'm Mark, and thank you so much for checking in. Today, great chat. Really enjoyed sitting down with our guest, the very talented actor Rob Corddry. He's got a new show called The Audacity. It is on AMC and AMC Plus. It's out right now. You could check him out there. But you know Rob from some of his greatest hits, like being one of the original cast members on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart back when Jon did it 5 days a week, Children's Hospital, Ballers, Top Gear America. Of course, on the big screen, Old School, The Heartbreak Kid with Ben Stiller, Hot Tub Time Machine, like a couple of my favorites. We even discuss it, Cedar Rapids, just a great film with Ed Helms. Also, The Way, Way Back with Steve Carell. Just really enjoyed the conversation with him. We just had a lot of fun. And one of those guys I would love to sit down and have a beer with. You know, I enjoy speaking with everybody, have a great time with every guest. But sometimes there are those guests that I'm like, you know, I think we're the same tribe. Fellow Gen X kid, we like a lot of the same shows and film, and just a cool dude. I mean, you got to work to not like Rob Corddry. Just, as my people say, a mensch. Of course, if you would, do me a favor, make sure to follow Story and Craft, whatever podcast app you use, as well as leave a like, ring a bell, do all that kind of other jazz. It really does help folks to find Story and Craft, and doggone it, I appreciate it. Also, Story and Craft pod.com, everything you could possibly want to know about the show. It's all right there, past guests and everything. Do me a favor if you would also. We are really enjoying being on Substack. And all you need to do is go to storyandcraft.substack.com. All right, so let's get after it, man. This is a great chat. I had so much fun. I know you'll enjoy it. Because today is Rob Corddry Day, right here on Story and Craft. So how things, where are you right now? Are you on the left coast?
Yeah. I'm in Silver Lake.
Is that a chalkboard behind you? Is that just?
Yeah. It was a grand idea I had about, you know, mapping out all of my ideas behind me in my office on this chalkboard wall. And that never happened.
Well, that's better than post-it notes. And
yeah, it's just not the way I work. And I tried it and I was like, ugh. I hate chalk.
Yeah. You know, when I was a kid, one of my favorite things to do, I thought I was a real cool guy. In sixth grade, I was a kid that could go clean the erasers. I don't know if you remember, but the teacher would do the erasers and they had all that powder and dust and stuff on them.
It was an honor. Yeah.
You got trusted to go down and handle heavy equipment. And we had the thing in the classroom, the big guillotine paper cutter thing, you know,
yes,
could easily
remove
the digits. So
we also had the mimeograph, like the, where we could run off copies.
Did you smell it also?
I can smell it right now.
My daughter's over here, like my 23-year-old's like, what is he talking about?
This
is
yeah.
So but you're originally, you're an East Coast kid, right? You're like a Massachusetts.
That's right. Yeah. Boston suburbs. Weymouth, Massachusetts.
When did you finally make the move out to LA?
You know, it was after The Daily Show, so it was about 20-something, 20 years ago and change. It was after The Daily Show. I had gotten a show, Seth MacFarlane's first live-action show. It was called The Winner, which is, in retrospect, a terrible thing to name a TV show because it just gives reviewers fodder.
Yeah, this gives them too cool, too cute. They could be too cute with the title.
Yeah, they're like, well, I got to automatically hate this because it's too good. It's too easy to the joke. But it was a rude awakening to the ways of real Hollywood after having been sheltered in the offices of The Daily Show for so long, you know.
Well, wait a minute. So this was your very first. That was your first project after The Daily Show was the Winner? Because I don't even remember. I don't even remember. I didn't know Seth MacFarlane had anything before the space thing he did.
There's no reason you should remember it. It ran for 6 episodes, and then I think it was about I played a recluse who befriended a 14-year-old boy, and you know, we were just best friends because I was sort of naive. And it was very, very funny. It was written by Ricky Blitt. And I think Fox got a little scared when they saw it. And they were like, did we just greenlight a show about a pedophile?
And you know? Fox would greenlight just about anything, really. About
yeah, that, yeah. Know? Pedophilia, I guess, is their line.
I don't like to do the resume thing with folks, but you're in some of my favorite stuff. And one of my favorite shows or films, it's Jim Rash at the way back. Jim Rash, drawing a blank on the writing partner. They did the Descendants also. Nat Faxon, who I've got That's a comedy right. crush on him. It's like that was such a my kids loved. You know, the way back. Right, Lily? Yeah, she's nodding her head.
She's nodding her head. Thanks, Lily. So,
thanks for the support. You've been in some stuff that, you know, I just got asked questions about. And I've noticed that you kind of landed a lot of projects with a lot of the same folks. But one question I've always wanted to ask, I don't know how many people can say they acted with Ben Stiller and his father together in a scene. I don't know how many people have that honor. And I want to kind of go back to the Heartbreak Kid. And what was the vibe in that room like? This is just me as a fanboy. I just got to know.
I it's one of those things that you don't appreciate it. You don't appreciate it as much until, you know, you're asked about it in an interview today. You know, I guess I had never really even thought of it, but yeah, that was quite something. Yeah. That is, I will tell you, speaking now, from the present day, it's quite an honor. Yeah. And kind of odd and, it's, something I wish I could afford to appreciate more in the moment, but in the moment I'm just trying to do the scene and treat it like these people are normal.
Well, it's funny you say that because you have this wonderful ability to, in the most beautiful way possible, celebrate the ridiculousness, the absurdity, and really swim in it, you know. But I was talking to Tom Harp about the donor party, which it's funny because when I watched that, I was going, everybody around you was kind of a little on the ridiculous side, but you're the level-headed one in the bunch.
Well, sure, it's my birthday. It was my birthday. Everybody was ruining it. That's right.
I'm sorry. I never really do that with folks, but you hit on like all 8 cylinders and some of the most.
Please, I love it. I love it. I think you and I have the same taste too. I listened to your episode with Thomas Jane, and I'm a big Expanse fan as well.
I talked with Shohreh Aghdashloo, Chrissy,
sure.
You know, it was sad about that. I didn't realize I was watching the last season because I watched it kind of after the fact. And I end up in the last episode, I'm like, all right, next season, you know, streaming. I'm like, wait, that was it? Uh-huh. Just fly out of the distance, you know.
I watched it pretty much when it came out, but it only was 4 seasons, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then I missed the next 2. I stopped watching it and I was like, that's the end. But then they made 2 more seasons like 2 years later. So I went back recently and rewatched the entire thing. And I even have the comic book sitting over there that continues 10 years after the show. Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. My son and I were really into it, and the other one we watched is the Apple show. Whenever I try to remember something, my brain just goes, no, you're not going to do that. But the one that kind of has the same tone, it's I'll remember it in a second. I don't want to waste your time.
Is it a space show?
Yeah.
It's about a space show. I'm in for all mankind.
No. That's a good. Actually, I'm going to talk. It's funny. I'm going to be talking with Joel Kinnaman here shortly, and I'm not.
Oh, I love that guy. God, please tell him I'm a big fan.
I was just talking to my daughter. I was a big fan of the of Hannah, the kind of the reboot of the film, and you know, that was fun. But I was going to ask you, it's rare you get to play a badass, but another one of those films that I just love that just kind of lands for me is Cedar Rapids. I just enjoyed that. I thought Ed Helms was so good in that, but you got to play kind of a fun, gnarly kind of a guy in that. Was it fun beating up on Ed Helms? I mean, you know, after working with him on The Daily Show?
Yes. After spending, you know, 5 years in an office, sharing an office with him and listening to him play the banjo and sing pretty much constantly. I didn't realize I wanted to do that so much. No, Ed was catharsis. I'm kidding, of course. Ed is great. He was great in that movie. And it's funny, I'm glad you seem to like the dark horses, a lot of the dark horses.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, like, I loved how Steve Carell, you got to really see him be a real big asshole in The Way, Way Back. You know, you saw him.
Yeah.
You know, and also that's the second film I can think of. You have a habit of having wives in films that are not terribly faithful to you. You know, I was like, does that end and in a world, you know, that
sure.
That's another thing I noticed. Your relationships in films are kind of a fun or like a, I find like little nuggets I really enjoy of everything you've done. And even being a father in Hot Tub Time Machine. I mean, no, that was its own kind of, you know.
Being a father. I know. It's the best. I love that movie, those movies so much. And I feel so lucky. Like if I was in the wrong place at the wrong time, I would have missed all that. And I'm just so lucky to have done it.
Going back to kind of quasi origin story, because the class, we'll call it a class on The Daily Show, of the guys you were working with, Steve and, you know, and Ed, and that was a special, you know, all y'all really kind of went off into your own thing and really have had remarkably just, I think, awesome kind of a collage of all different kind of roles and stuff like that. I mean, was there something in the water? Did Jon Stewart create some kind of super drug for y'all? What was going on back then?
I don't really know. I mean, well, the war was very good to us.
Oh, yeah.
And George W. was the gift that kept giving. Mm-hmm. And his whole cadre of evildoers was always fun. So they did have a lot to do with it. But John really, he was steering the ship, and I think it was, I don't really know. I mean, it was the only time I've been lucky like that in the way that something hits the zeitgeist and becomes a cultural fascination, and to be part of that is insane. And it's actually kind of uncomfortable at the time. Looking back, it's great, but at the time we were just trying to make jokes. And I was sort of the poop joke guy out of all of them, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, on your resume, the Daily Show from this state, there's a poop joke guy in italics.
Poop joke guy. Yeah.
But like Colbert kind of ran with that. You know, he kind of stayed on that quasi, right. Not political, but so, you know, I think, well, that's what comedy does. It kind of makes a lot of heavy more palatable.
A lot of them did. I mean, it's like me, Carell, and Ed Helms, I guess, are we went a different way, but everybody else from The Daily Show seems to have Stephen Colbert explained it to me once. It was after he did the movie I Dream of Jeannie or something, and I said, how was it, and he said it was the worst. He goes, really? I don't like all that. I like reading the news in the morning, shoving it through a joke pipe during the day, and then saying it and saying the joke at night, you know? And that's when I realized how different we were, you know? Yeah. I mean, I always think of him as sort of a mentor in a lot of ways, but like that was never my intent, never my goals. I never wanted to like be that
guy. Do you think he just found himself drifting into a different season of his career and just kind of like, well, and that kind of really resonated with him, I assume, you know, where
you find something, you know, you might even just be like getting blown by the wind from project to project, you know, and like, and thing to thing, and then you find yourself in something that you belong in, that is really that speaks to you, and that it uses your talents, your best talents, to great effect. And I think that was Steven, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that was Sam.
Obviously, it worked. I mean, you know, he got, you know, being canceled by the president. I mean, essentially, you know your job. You've been doing your job right. If the excuse me, I'm allergic to my kids. I apologize.
I'm allergic to your kids too.
Yeah, the thing I loved is it made people think about maybe, I don't want to say news, but kind of framing like what's going on in the world, and you can laugh about. And I think that's kind of, you go back in time, that's kind of the way it's always been in a way, which I think is cool. But that's a lot of homework for you. I can't even imagine what the production schedule was like for you on the Daily Show to conceive, you know. They always talk about the Saturday Night Live about what their production schedules are like, but the Daily Show, I'm like, how long did you have from concept to air date
on morning to evening?
Really?
Yeah, there was never any plan. And you know, and sometimes, let's say, I don't know, Dick Cheney shoots one of his friends in the face while hunting, then everything changes and a red phone rings and you swing down your bat pole and get into your suit and head down to the Daily Show cave where everybody is just on this one thing. So it is a lot like a newsroom in that regard. You know, it's daily. Truly daily, in that it's, they may have ideas of what's going to happen from show to show or like segments, but mostly the headlines are just from that day.
If you were doing it right now, given where we are politically, socially, would your head explode with just too many ideas? I mean, you know, I don't even know. It's almost like I was watching Patton Oswalt. See, everybody says, oh yeah, comedians, you must love it when Trump's president. He's like, no, it's just this, he did this, I'm not going to even go into the bit, but basically it's like, no, we don't like it. There's simply just too much. It's just, imagine doing that now. You know,
it's not fun. That would not be fun. George W. Bush was fun. But no, Trump is like, it's almost satire. He's practically doing satire and without knowing it. And then what makes it sad is the people that just think this is real and, you know, think he's the real deal. And I don't know. I don't know if I'd be able to do it.
You know who's doing a great job at the Daily Show is his name starts with a K. Tall guy. I'm trying to think of his name. The one that does the packages, he more kind of explores like going in and talking to the, you know.
He's the man on the street guy. I know who you're talking about.
It's what a great thing. Just explain to me why you think the way you do and to not make passing any judgment. Just it's tough times for thinking people, I think, you know.
That is a good take on what's happening today, to just let them have their thing and just react to it, you know.
Well, didn't you play Ari Fleischer in W?
I did.
Yeah. So what was that like to kind of flip on the other side of the Bush experience? Were you already primed for it, or did you have to kind of watch a lot of old video of Fleischer doing press conferences and stuff?
No, I mean, I did watch some, but I was pretty much, in attuned to that whole thing. And I knew of that man very well. And, you know, I made the mistake of actually getting in touch with him. I was the only one out of the cast who actually asked, you know, got to ask questions of the person they were playing. And I don't know why I did it. I think I did it at the time because I was younger and thought this is maybe what you do. Maybe I'll discover something here that is valuable. And I discovered nothing. He was a press secretary, which is the hardest kind of person to talk to.
Yes. Well, unless you're was it Caroline Leavitt or whatever, it's just you look at him and go, you're not trying to even find the shadings. You're not even trying to frame it. You're just like, you know, dear leader, he wants this, you know.
Yeah.
Like when you, growing up in, how far from Boston were you? Pardon my, I'm a Texas kid, so pardon my geographical ignorance, but how far from Boston did you grow up?
Depending on traffic, I would say as a pretty, pretty close. Like we could see from a point in my town, a high point in my town, you could see the skyline. So it was, and it was fairly close. So I would say about 15 minutes.
Oh, okay. So you're in the metro. Okay. So you're there. Yeah. So what was coming up? Were you, I know you had some classical training and stuff, but were you like, okay, I'm going to set up shop. This is going to be my home base, or was an aspiration to go, no, I want to be in film, or I want to do stage in New York, or what was the aspiration as a young?
Yeah. Well, actually, in college as a theater major, I got really, really into Shakespeare. I was a double major in English and theater, and I focused my English major on drama. I got pretty deep into that and I graduated fancying myself as a Shakespearean actor. Mm-hmm. Whether I was any good at it or not, I have no idea, but
what was it that kind of grabbed you? Was it just the rhythm of the verbiage, or was it the story, or what was it that grabbed you?
I mean, iambic pentameter is a lot easier to act than people think, you know. Yeah. He's telling you what to emphasize. But these stories are indelible because for a reason. They're still to this day, I like reading Hamlet. They're so dense. You know, that I find new things when I read it, and I always read it out loud to my wife's delight or chagrin. Mm-hmm. And I'm will always be enamored with it. I don't know if I'll ever have the chance to do it again, but I thought I'm going to do this. I'm going to go to New York, and I'm going to be a Shakespearean actor.
Oh, by the way, I was going to ask Amelia, by any chance, are you on mute right now? Or are you?
No,
I'm hearing. Amelia, I didn't know she's in the producer position.
Sorry.
I'm hearing. Yes.
Something. Oh my gosh. I don't think I am on mute. I'm sorry. Let me turn this off. Okay. Sorry.
Don't cut that. Please don't cut this. Hi, Amelia. don't cut this sorry, from the guys. Podcast.
I'm getting jacked and I'm typing. So
Mark.
Sorry.
Mark, she does this on purpose because, you know, she wants to get in the spotlight.
Just interview me. I'm ready to go. Thanks.
We will. I want to talk about Katz's Deli and everything. You're in New York, you know. I'm a Jewish kid who doesn't have access to good deli, you know.
Oh, yeah. That's send a salami to your boy in the army.
Exactly.
Hey, I'm Andy from the Ultimate Trivia Podcast.
The Ultimate Trivia Podcast.
Our show is pretty simple. Five lifelong friends competing on a single topic to see who gets bragging rights. Each episode, Nick, Scott, Brian, Kelly, and I battle through 10 questions on movies, music, science, history, sports, whatever we decide to throw in the blender for that week. Every episode stands on its own, so you can jump in wherever your curiosity takes you. And we don't just stop at right or wrong. We get into the backstory, the origins, the weird facts, and the stuff that has you saying, how did I not know that already? So download an episode, play along, keep score, and tell us how you do. See if you can beat the crew on the Ultimate Trivia Podcast.
So you did you get to New York with a gig already, or did you land
starting to work in restaurants and trying to do Shakespeare? What was the path for you?
Yeah, that's right. I landed in New York with nothing but a plan to work. And I really, if I had one thing going for me, it was my focus, my rigorous desire, my focus to get this done. And I was going to, I had no backup plan, because I always believe that a backup plan is you're going to fall upon it if you have one eventually. And I'm going to have to do this. So let's get it done and figure out what I'm not good at and get better at it.
How old were you when you made your way there?
I mean, I guess I was probably 21, 22.
Oh, okay.
22. Yeah. It was right after graduation.
What kind of work were your folks in?
My mother was a, frustrated housewife, I guess. Because, you know, she always sort of wanted to work. She was a nurse, trained nurse. Uh-huh. And then when she started having kids, let that fall away. And I think kind of didn't know what to do with her hands for a lot of years. My dad was a civil engineer, and he worked for like one company in Boston for, God, it might have been 40 some odd years. And he, you know, like he worked at the airport, he worked at the bridges. That was his thing. So, but they were both, I think, in their hearts, actors or performers, at least, you know.
It's ringing a bell. Didn't Bill Burr's dad also, when he's from Boston, didn't he do some kind of civil?
Probably. There's a lot of blue collar to, you know, white collar in the blue collar world, jobs in Boston. It's a very blue collar town. And so, yeah, probably he was that or a pipe fitter.
So what were the folks thinking? You're like, all right, you know, he's going to head off to New York. Or were they kind of behind you? Were they like, well, I guess,
yeah,
go for it.
My dad was funny. He always, every time I had an aspiration, he would support it. They were always supportive, both of them, but he would always try and sort of twist it in a way that I'm more apt to make some money. Like when I wanted to be a writer when I was younger, he was like, you know what you could be is a technical writer. You could write dictionaries and instruction manuals.
Because that was what he was familiar with. He was trying to figure out a way to apply your aspirations to something he understood, you know.
Yes, and also to make sure that his child, you know, could take care of himself. I wanted to be an artist, and he said, oh, you could be a commercial artist. You know, everything was like that. But when I said I wanted to be an actor, this was about sophomore year, probably. I started toying with it in college. My parents were both, you know, surprisingly supportive, because I think neither of us had any idea how difficult it actually is. It's almost like growing up in this blue collar town, we didn't even believe in that there were people who did that job. Mm-hmm. You know, they never had any examples that I could point at and say that person made it as an actor. You know, it was just kind of a mystery to me. People don't do that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess somebody does, and it's confusing.
Well, don't we kind of need that naivete when we're young to be able to jump into something, which is, you know, if you know then what you know now, you may be less inclined to want to do it because you know it's, you know, potentially in front of you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I for instance, my youngest daughter is a musician. She's a brilliant guitarist, and I always thought like, ah, boy, this is rock and roll, huh? Here we go.
So she's not doing like classical. She's doing like, she's wanting to do.
She does everything.
Like, how old are your daughters?
17 and 19.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, and, I got to ask, though, when growing up, were you ever, like, were you hyper-selective on what things that you'd show them that dad does? Or were you like, all right, you're going to see it eventually? You know, some things that would be a little bit more better digested later in years, you know?
I mean, you know, growing up in L.A., it's easier for these kids to sort of digest it because there's a lot of performers around, a lot of writers around, and, you know, half of the kids' school, half their dads were actors and writers. But there was one day when, a new season of Children's Hospital was being released, and my face, my clown face, was all over buses in Los Angeles. And, my youngest daughter, who was probably like 6 at the time, was driving with my wife, and there a bus pulled up next to them, and she just kind of like bored said, "Mommy, there's the clown again."
Well, did she know it was you, or did
yes.
she?
Yep.
Oh, she did. Okay, yep. Okay.
Yeah.
What was it like being on that show and being the only one who was wearing clown makeup? I know you've probably been asked that question a bunch, but it's like when you show up, everybody else goes to the makeup trailer. They're just getting polished up, and you're going in there to you're going.
I know. I'm usually in and out of the hair makeup trailer like 5-10 minutes. And that was something, you know, I never cast myself as that in that role. I wrote it, and one of my partners said, you're going to play the clown, right? And I was like, sure. Not knowing what I was getting myself into. And it was a pain in the ass. I mean, the makeup was heavy. It was like grease paint.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, if you would paint on your eyelids, it makes you feel sleepy because it just drags your eyes down. That was horrible. And luckily I really loved my makeup artist who designed the makeup with me. She was wonderful, and I got to hang out with her for a while.
I just like the fact that you always wore scrubs just utterly covered in blood, but no real explanation as to why.
I know, right? Like, he never got to the cleaters after that surgery season one.
You know, kind of going forward, I've never watched it, but I know what the Top Gear show is all. It's guys in the cars. How did you land on doing that? Are you a car guy? Are you a?
Yeah, I am. And I've heard over the years about these guys that would just like these actors who would get cars sent to them for a weekend just to try out. And I wanted that. That's what I was going for. I just wanted to be one of those guys. And so I would drop it in the media that I was a big car guy here and there.
So you had your fishing pole out. You're baiting it. You're like, I just let people know.
Yeah, I was just baiting the car companies, really, through people like you. I would plant it. And then the Top Gear, you know, took the bait. And
yeah, I know Dax Shepard's a motorhead, you know, his jam. But is your thing kind of what's new and cool, or are you more of a classic or, you know, muscle car kind of a guy?
I don't have that's the thing. I think that's why they cast me to begin with, because, you know, the other two guys were real gearheads. Like, Dax is from Detroit. He knows everything about cars. And Jethro is from England, and he was like the supercar expert who wrote for magazines. And I was basically the everyman, you know. I was the viewer, essentially. And that was the viewer's stand-in, and they could relate to me.
What a great idea. What a great idea. Cause I think everybody can live vicariously through you, as you know. Hey, I'm gonna make you jealous real quick. I'm gonna make you just see. My dad ran car dealerships when I was growing up, and he ran primarily Ford and Lincoln Mercury. You know, I didn't have a car when I first got my license, but every weekend I was allowed to take a car home off the lot. to drive, you know, to go do stuff. And they were the exclusive dealer in Dallas for they had a Ford Mustang that gets modified by a guy named Steve Saleen, the Saleen Mustang. So there's no reason a 16-year-old needs to be driving that car around on a Friday night, just none.
And it's a terrible idea.
You know, the old Bronco, which I wish they would bring back, the original, you know, the OJ Bronco, you know. And so yeah. I would have to have these like circa 1990, you know, because we're both Gen X kids, you know, we both had, you know, we had a good selection of some fun cars growing up.
Sure.
But what was your first car?
Oh, my God. My first car was one of the worst cars ever. And I loved it more than anything. I love to drive. I love cars. And it was a 1975 Ford Pinto wagon with rusted out floorboards and just a couple years left in the tank. And it was...
Did you play Queen on the stereo? Because I hear that's what you got to do with that car. You know.
Well, I do remember ruining Beastie Boys, Paul's Boutique, I believe. Actually, the tape just wore down. I had a tape deck in there, and I threw it out the window and had to go buy another one.
Did you ever have the thing where you took the tape out of the tape deck and there's still tape stuck in there, and you're like deciding whether or not you want to sacrifice it to the music gods, or if you wanted to surgically do it?
And I would surgically do it. I would you just get the pencil in the sprocket and you try and wind it back up, but it never really sounds the same again.
Yeah, going back to Patton Oswalt, he has this bit. He did DJing for weddings, and they were still the last DJ business that still used cassette tapes. And they're all worn out and warped, and or not warped, but they had that worn sound that they get, you know. But what, by the way, going back, speaking of Gen X, I always got to ask when I'm fortunate to have somebody of my tribe.
Yeah.
Musically, movies, what was sparking your imagination and just kind of firing up, you know, is this making you... That maybe sort of like was sort of that fuel that pushed you later on to decide, yeah, I want to do this film thing and all that.
Oh, boy. I mean, you know, I'm an easy audience. I pretty much like anything with images that move and jokes come out of. So I was, as a kid, I pretty much liked everything. I really loved the Brat Pack movies, you know, all of those from, you know, I can't even begin to list them all, but those are probably the first comedies I would like,
you know, because Phoebe Cates was in there, and like, you know,
that's, sure was.
Well, then again, you know, Cusack being just kind of the guy that was almost like he was on the Mount Rushmore. What was like when you connecting on the Hot Tub Time Machine? It was, of course, you know, as a Gen X kid, you go, I know you.
It's pretty wild. Yeah, it's like you're trying not to appreciate it the way you're appreciating it in the moment, and just be normal. Because this guy is
and
like,
remember your lines. Yeah,
you've seen absolutely everything he's done. And are a fan. That was a treat. And then, you know, working with Chevy Chase on that movie as well. You know, he was one of my comedy heroes. You know, I loved the Fletch movies, the Vacation movies. I mean, Christmas Vacation is one of the best comedies I think ever written.
It was so funny because with the spaceship going to the moon and the toilet had an issue, everybody was putting up the Cousin Eddie memes, you know, the shitter's clogged or whatever, you know. But yeah, I still say that was where the sequel, I think, was actually better than the original, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I appreciate all of them, even though, you know, some of the later ones weren't as good, but I still appreciate the effort. You know, I appreciate them, the keeping the world together and going. I love that. But I also want to switching gears a little bit away from that. I want to also give props to probably my favorite comedy of all time. that I saw when I was a kid, and I have probably seen more than any other comedy, and that's Dudley Moore's Arthur.
Oh, yeah. That was a great movie, but it had some heavy moments. John Gielgud, you know.
Yes, that's what I love. That's what I thought comedy was. I thought comedy was what television has become these days. This dramedy is, you can't have a drama without jokes. And this is like a comedy with some really, really poignant moments. You know,
well, basically, he has almost no family, and the only family he has left is his butler, which is as de facto, yeah, he becomes essentially, that's his father.
That's his father figure.
So it's a real exploration. It's not just there. I'm just a couple of years younger than you, like the year and a half, I think. When's your birthday?
February.
Okay, yeah, mine's on the 1st, so exactly 2 years younger. So we're watching the same stuff. And, you know, my parents took me to movies. I probably, like Dirty Harry, some movies I shouldn't have gone in, but, you know, kids, you're seeing stuff that, and watching Arthur, you start realizing, wow, here's this guy who seems like a buffoon, but he's going through some real emotion. And it's kind of like, wait, I thought I was going to be laughing at this thing, you know?
Yeah. Looking back, I mean, it's really unconsciously, I mean, a movie that's written that well and plotted so perfectly, it really kind of, I think, unconsciously prepares you for, you know, prepared me for the future.
Well, that's, you know, it's funny you say that, because when I say absurd, I mean so in not a reductive, but a very loving way. You know, you find yourself in a lot of, I don't see absurd characters, but, you know, just Hot Tub Time Machine, let's go back to that. But you can still, you still sort of see there's still some moments of heaviness, you know, and like, you know, the way your character gets introduced, you know, there's like an interesting through line. Like, this guy's going through, he doesn't feel appreciated. He doesn't really feel, you know.
Yeah. Like, I mean, that was something that we all talked about and all wanted to make sure was underlined and spotlighted, was that these guys were friends years ago, but they're not friends really anymore. And what happens when that, you know, what happens to each individual when a friendship breaks, or sort of splinters at least, and it had a different effect on all of us. And we all wanted to show that, especially John. You know, John is very conscious of that, that comedy, that kind of doing that kind of comedy that I love, which is it can be absurd, it can be crazy, but yet let's ground it.
Just the things he was in, I just enjoyed. It's not like we watch TV the same way, where we watch something and a rerun comes on, or, you know, now you have to actively more find something on streaming, you know. But he had a career I kind of wish I would have. That guy in the 80s, if you were a Gen X, because those Gen X kids were a little, I feel like I'm kind of a middle Gen X kid, because all the ones who were in the Brat Pack were about 3, 4, 5 years older, you know, all Breakfast Club, you know, folks.
Yeah.
But what, like, when you kind of going forward, you know, with all the stuff, I mean, you have an awesome constellation of work, but what is it that's the deciding factor for you now? I mean, I'm assuming, you know, not as many auditions as there used to be. Now it's like, hey, Rob, you want to do this thing? You know.
Ideally, but I'm actually pretty good at, I think I've become fairly good at auditioning. So I always tell my agents, I will do it. I want to, if I want to get a job, I will show them, you know, that I can do it, so they feel better about casting me, or more secure, or however. It is nice to just get, you know, offered roles rather than having to go through the, it's like, you know, back in the day I was just combing through Backstage magazine, you know.
But I mean, now that you have an opportunity, you have relationships, obviously, you know, like I know, like Lake Bell, you've been in a few things, you know, with, and
yeah,
you know, so you keep, you know, you got, I think, just the best of all worlds, you know, people you can get together and create something, you know.
Yeah. But
if you were to say now, okay, this is something I haven't done, or maybe you have done, do you want to return to it, that you kind of feel like I want to tell stories in this genre or in this ecosystem or whatever you want to call it? What would that be for you right now?
Oh boy. You know, it changes all the time. You know, I was trying to write a mystery because I love mysteries, and it's probably one of the hardest things to write, and I just couldn't do it. And so now I'm trying to learn how to write mysteries, and that's hard in and of itself, that education. And I've always wanted to write like, I have a spy movie that has been in the hopper for a while, you know, that I sometimes go back to and then end up hating.
I mean, do you enjoy writing, or is it just,
I love
it. You do? Okay.
I love it when I'm acting, I feel like that's what I love. And then when I'm writing, I feel like I don't want to be doing anything else but this.
Is there anybody you're like, God, I would love to just collaborate with them on a project?
You know, well, yeah, there was. He passed away last year. David Lynch.
Oh.
I'm a big, big fan of David Lynch. And always, like, I'm sort of obsessed with, like, who picks up the baton and what does that look like? You know, there's Yagos, how do you say his last name? Lathimos, the lobster.
Cinematographer? Oh,
no, he does a Begonia, I believe.
Yeah, I gotcha.
You know, he's people that make weird world movies. Whereas like David Lynch was making movies based on the dreams he had the night before.
Really?
You know, he was just flying by the seat of his pants at times, with a script, but like that's the kind of freedom and artistry that I would love to do. I would love to be able to create a world of that is off. You know, yeah. Like Children's Hospital was, I mean, it's a pretty absurd slapstick comedy, but it's, you know.
No, it does have that kind of kind of component to it. Yeah,
it definitely. And I was always in favor of explaining that to a certain degree or hinting more toward it. Whereas the other guys were like, or we could just do jokes. And they were probably right. But, you know, why is there no continuity in this show? You know, what explains the oddness that sort of
like all the blood on your scrubs. There's no explanation to that. It's just you show up and you're bloody, you know.
I thought that was I always thought of clowns as being a race in and of itself, and that was his clown costume.
Oh, okay.
So it was
okay.
fake blood. But you know, there was one previously on we did, and all our previously ons were fake. You know, they weren't taken from, we just did them. We just wrote them. There was just a chance to write some separate jokes. Was me in a closet dipping my hand in fake blood and putting it on my scrubs. But that's the only reference ever. And that's the first season to where or and why. And even his daily clothes have blood right there. So that's his sort of clown costume. He's committed to that.
That's a great way of putting it. That's kind of the reason why I'm kind of predicting a little bit of a return with everything going corporate wise of filmmaking. I would love to see that resurgence we had a few years back with all these independent films. They were just interesting. They were just, you know, like I mentioned, like kind of like way, way back. It's something kids would enjoy, but it's really kind of universal, like a nice little kind of jewel box of a film. You know, I don't know the best way to put it, but
I mean, I think we're due for that, right?
I think so.
You know, everything comes in waves. Like R-rated movies, for instance, had a time, and I was able to capitalize on that to a certain degree.
I mean, you were kind of like being an old school. That's sort of like on the Mount Rushmore of those, you know.
And now that's sort of gone, right? Now, but it'll come back. And I think everything like those 90s, movies in Hollywood from the 70s and 90s were just sort of like, let's put on a show ideas. And that is my producing partner, John Stern, who produced Children's Hospital with me, is produced a lot of those movies in the 90s out of NYU. And he, so when it happens, I'm ready. It's just
I don't think there's anybody else who's more ready than you. I mean, if you look at I love Lower Learning, that movie's worth watching just to see how you interact with children. Like just the way you talk to them. It's like the kids put up with it.
You like the dark horses, man. Love it.
I'm a weirdo. It was rated R in a fun way. And it's like the kids they cast were sort of like, they just sort of accepted it. That's just the kind of the way you are. You're this bizarre principal. We got to watch Lower Learning. I got to tell my daughter, we got to watch that. I don't think my kids have seen it yet. I think they would appreciate it. Oh, by the way, I remember what that TV show is on Apple. It's The Foundation.
The Foundation. That's interesting. I kind of fell off that because it is like The Expanse, but it's a good show. And I love that guy. What's his name?
The British guy.
He was in Halt and Catch Fire as well. I'm just blanking on his name. He was in Halt and Catch Fire, and he's like one of the leads of Foundation. He's probably number one on the call sheet.
Yeah,
Lee Pace.
Lee Pace.
Yeah.
I thought you were meaning Jared Harris, but yeah, Lee Pace is
Jared Harris.
The whole concept. Yeah, that guy is so talented, but
wonderfully has thought out world and universe.
Each thing's its own season. It's one of the things you can't just jump in midstream. You got to kind of follow along.
If I were to keep going with it, I would have to watch it from season one, because I don't remember things. Which is kind of great in that I can watch things over and over and it's like the first time.
You know what's great is when you finally catch up with something you haven't seen. Like me, I'm catching up to stuff I've never seen. Homeland. I was just telling my daughter about it. And with Mandy Patinkin and Claire Danes. And I just caught up with that. And I missed like 24 in that vibe. And like, I'm only 15, 14, whatever years too late. But I just powered through in the last month, like 5 seasons, which is fun to discover something that you just never caught in the moment,
Or to discover that something doesn't quite hold up like it did when you were younger, we tried to rewatch, my wife and I tried to rewatch 6 Feet Under, and I didn't care for it this time around. I thought it was just too much, too serious, too prestigious, in quotes.
Isn't that funny? I think art is reflective of the times and stuff like that. I know when COVID kicked in, I told my kids, hey, let's watch Lost. And we watched Lost and power watched every season during COVID, when they're doing school at home.
Oh, that's awesome.
I don't know if that's healthy to watch. It kind of reminds me of that scene from Judd Apatow's daughter from This Is 40, when she's power watching all those episodes and she's like, it's expanding my brain, but Judd Apatow, see, that's I think anything he does, I want to see you in it. I just think that would be, match made in heaven right there. I've still got his book down here I need to go through. I don't know if you've seen his this almost Bible of he created this enormous thick, Odyssey.
I'm a big fan. There's no one quite like him, right? I mean, he's been interviewing comedians since he was a child.
That's one thing I appreciate. Just before you knew exactly, just the fearlessness of doing that. You got to be like that as a kid, I think.
Yeah, he's fascinating. He's fascinating and very funny. I like him a lot.
Well, before we get going, I always do my 7 questions on the back end, a little extra fun, a little extra get to know you. And I always end up talking food. We talked about salami a moment ago, but I talk food at least once every episode. But I got to ask, what is your favorite comfort food? That thing, good day, bad day, it always lands for you.
It changes. But these days it is I get a child's size smash burger. With and it's at a place nearby called Goldburger. I always get it from that hamburger, a cheeseburger with just ketchup, mustard, onions, pickles, like a McDonald's burger is, mm-hmm. like it should be. And then fries, and they got great fries. And that's what I'm probably going to find some comfort in when we hang up here.
Well, we're down here in Texas, we have Whataburger, which is, you know, we're not ketchup people down here. I will say that although I did see Matthew McConaughey talk about how he takes it, and he's as Texan as they come,
right.
Dips his whole burger in ketchup, which I'm like, yeah. Oh, that's well, interesting.
Sure. I'll do that. I don't think barbecue sauce should be on ketchup. No. If that's what your state is saying.
No, it's just we're just mustard people. You know, we're just mustard and you know, no ketchup. But yeah, it's a Texas thing. Although my daughter over here, she's an In-N-Out burger person. So, you know.
Oh my God, yeah.
You know, gonna disown you.
They're great.
She's just staring at me like, be quiet.
What a burger is good though.
Yeah,
my wife tasty. Is from Texas.
Oh, whereabouts?
From Sugar Land outside of Houston.
Oh, down Houston, yeah. In well, Houston, I'm down yeah. on South Padre Island. This is I had to get my tropical Mayberry thing going
oh,
on
nice.
Down here. Yeah. Yeah, this is where Elon Musk sends his rockets up about 7 miles yeah. south of me, so that's kind of fun.
That's fun.
Now, next question. If you're going to sit down with three people, living or not, and you're going to have coffee, talk story for hours, who would those three people be, living or not, you'd like to sit down with?
William Shakespeare, David Lynch, and... third one, I would say, let's throw a John Belushi into the mix. Just to,
very nice.
Just to liven nice. Things up. Just so we'd have some cocaine.
Yeah.
I could introduce Shakespeare to cocaine.
Wow. And iambic pentameter gets turned up a notch. Yeah. That would be interesting. Now,
I had
going
some
back
coke and tried to go to bed.
What was it? Edgar Allan Poe. That was his, wasn't that his thing? I think, I don't know. I'm trying to remember ninth grade English, you know.
Oh, no. Shakespeare is definitely iambic pentameter. It's like a guidebook for actors if they would follow it.
Oh, no. I'm talking about, you know, chemically induced, you know.
Oh.
Edgar Allan Poe, I think. Wasn't he kind of.
Oh, yeah. He was into like opium or Dilaudid,
oh,
I believe.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Hey, this is a real family-friendly program today. now, next question. Who was your celebrity crush when you were a young Rob?
Oh, when I was young, it was Winona Ryder.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, I see that you, that was the senior, you're Mary Stuart Masterson. Come on.
Oh,
that was
yeah.
like, you know, what was that film she was in? She's drummer. I don't know. See here, I'm trying to
yeah,
remember.
Yeah, Some Kind of Wonderful.
Some Kind of Wonderful, yeah.
Yeah. Of course. And, you know, I all those women, but I Winona, I put on a pedestal and I now have a crush on Mary Stuart Masterson after having worked with her. Like now,
oh,
and now
she's awesome.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Aged like a fine wine. Absolutely.
Oh, she's an amazing woman.
Is The Senior out now or is that going to be coming
yeah.
out?
Yeah, that came out. I think it did fairly well, too. It was out in theaters for a little bit.
The Audacity, that's coming out here was...
Yeah, The Audacity on AMC, AMC Plus.
What a cast that was. That guy, yeah,
oh, my God.
But Billy Magnusson, that kid's cool. And I had a chance to chat with him a while back. He is just as cool as they come. And
he is,
you know,
so fun, man. I love that guy. I actually was just emailing him today. You know, I've since done a project with him, actually a sort of Texas-based project that his company put together, Mattress Mac. You might only know it if you're from Houston.
I'm
one
a
of
Dallas
those regional kid, commercial guys.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I was just asking him to do an animated show I'm producing right now, but I will do anything that guy wants to do. And I hope he feels the same because
he was so much fun. I was one of my favorite chats. And then it was for when he played a Nazi officer, you know, and then 2 seconds later, he's in a James Bond film playing a bad guy. You know, I'm like,
right,
he's just,
right.
you know, he just is chill as they come. Absolutely. Now, yeah. real quick. Now, next question, if I was to say, okay, Rob, you're going to be on an island for a year. It's an exotic island. You love being there, but there's no streaming. So if you want to listen to music, you got to bring one CD or a box set. And if you want to watch a movie, you got to bring one DVD. So what would that CD and what would that DVD be for that whole year, something you can watch over and over again.
Oh, geez, Louise, I can't believe you're asking me this. This is terrible. This is something that, you know, it's one of those things I've been talking about my whole life and for some reason obsessed with and thinking about. And I can't give you a satisfying answer, but I will say that the second side of Abbey Road is the best music ever recorded. So I think I'd have to bring that just, you know, by default.
Well, Beatles always show up. So that's yeah. They're evergreen, you know.
Yeah. And the DVD would probably be Arthur, because that's one of those movies I can just watch and watch again right after watching it.
You know, I haven't seen that in a long time. So it's kind of fun when you, in different eras of your life, to kind of go back to the same movies and kind of see what you pick up on. Yeah.
Yeah. Come back to terms with Arthur. It's one of the best.
That's on my list now. Now, real quick, I want to ask, what would be next question? What would be the definition from the time you get up to the time you go to sleep? The component parts, the recipe of a perfect day for you.
To feel like I got something done, whether that be something around the house or something creative. I just want to feel like I've accomplished something. And oftentimes, you know, we're thwarted in this modern age.
Was it man plans, God laughs? Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, sometimes I'll go to bed frustrated and, but also sometimes my perfect day is just sitting in my office here, watching TV, eating my smash burger, and in a world all to my own device.
So it would be a day where your head can just kind of go wherever it goes. And
yeah, I love it. I love just
That's a luxury I'm finding these days. Big luxury. Now, if somebody said, Rob, you know, the creative, the writing, the acting, all the things you're doing now, it's just not going to be available to you anymore. What is another vocation you could jump into and go, that would be my number two?
Oh, yay, yay. Boy, I would say, I've always said truck driving. I would like to drive truck because, you know,
like
I love driving.
Long
haul trips. You know, and then, you know, I heard that, those guys really get screwed. Mm-hmm. But you know, that's, I mean, in the romantic sense, that's the job I would love to do.
Yeah. Cause just, you know, exploring different truck stops, seeing different stuff. I always wonder, would you fatigue of that and want a home base? Or would that become a good lifestyle of just being, you know, same thing of like an airline pilot, you know, so the same kind of thing. Would you always want to be going somewhere, you know?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, one of my favorite guilty pleasure reads is the Jack Reacher series by Lee Child, uh-huh. because the guy just goes where the wind blows him. And that's what I appreciate about it. You know, I just like the fact that he only owns a toothbrush. And
yeah, I always was secretly envious of the people who pack everything into a bag and just go. I'm like, how do you do that? I got entirely too much stuff to do that, you know?
Yeah, I hate stuff now. I don't want any more stuff.
Yeah, I'm definitely in a paring down mode myself.
Uh-huh.
Now, the last question I got for you, if you could jump in that DeLorean and you can go back 16-year-old you, and you got a couple nuggets of advice just for a few minutes to give 16-year-old you to make that moment somehow better or put yourself on a little bit different trajectory, what would that advice be?
I would say, first of all, relax. Nobody is looking at you or talking about you. Everybody's in their own movie. Mm-hmm. So just do your movie, you know, be in your own, be the star of your own movie. And, you know, that I just watched that show DTF St. Louis. And there's this great line that I really related to that I might say to my younger self, which is everybody looks weird. I mean, everybody looks normal from across the street. Yeah. So, you know, cause I was an anxious, I think very internally anxious, I had a lot of fears.
Yeah, I totally identify because I think that's, isn't it strange when you get to that point in your life, you realize that, but you need to look at some other adults, air quotes here, that are still living in that headspace. I'm like the whole gossip thing and the whole, it's like,
I'm not into that so much. I'm not into that. But I had like after college, crippling social anxiety. And so I would want to head that off at the pass, you know, and just say like, don't worry. It's not, what if somebody is talking about you, about that crazy thing you did that's keeping you up at night? It's not the end of the world.
Yeah. And it's really more of a reflection about what they're all about, not you.
Yeah. That's the benefits of the wisdom that comes with age. You know, you can sort of worry less and just carry on.
Absolutely. Well, my friend, I want to thank you for sharing some time. This has been so much fun, man. I appreciate it. This has been a joy. I love your work. And I just, anything that you're in, I got to see it. You know, he's one of those handful of guys that, you know, I just got to do it. You know, it's always good to connect with a fellow Gen Xer who's done good, you know.
Well, thank you. So, thank you for giving me the opportunity to promote the audacity and to have an actual conversation. This is it's rare and valuable to me.
A ditto here, my friend, and we'll go and enjoy some time with your daughter. I'm looking forward to downloading one of her MP3s one day. You know, I'll jam all out right to it, you know, and do it.
So, oh, you actually can. Star. You actually can. She released a song with her band. It's called Lemonade, by the band Four Leaf. I believe they're on Spotify and Apple Music. And it's like this like dirty funk, man. I don't know where these kids got it, but it's awesome. Anyway, that's why I promoted my daughter's single.
Dude, you know what? We got to pass it along to the next generation.
Man.
It'll be wonderful. Have a great rest of your week. And hopefully we'll have a chance to catch up down the line.
Yeah, you too. I hope so too. Thanks. Bye.
Okay, there you go, Mr. Rob Corddry. Man, I had fun. He is a cool dude. Come on. Rob's the real deal when it comes to film and TV. Anything Rob's in, I'm going to go see. He's just he always lands it, right? He's always funny. He always elevates the level of whatever he's up to. Come on, nowadays you need a good laugh, right? There you go. We're all about, you know, seeing if we could find more smiles, more laughs. It's a thing. Okay, so I'm going to get on out of here. But before I go, I wanted to make sure you follow Story and Craft on whatever podcast app you use. Just follow it, like it, because it really helps people to find the show, and as well as Story and Craft Pod.com. That's the website. Everything about past guests, past episodes, it's all right there. But of course, we're on Substack. Just go to storyandcraft.substack.com. That way you get an email every time a new episode comes out. Plus, that's kind of where some of the cool odds and ends and fun stuff and extras will start landing, is at Substack. And I do really like promoting independent media now more than ever. So join us there if you would. Hey, do me a favor, go have an amazing day. And I always want to thank you for making what I got going on here part of whatever you've got going on. I love the connection and it means a lot to me. And I hope you have an absolutely stellar, awesome, beautiful, wonderful rest of your day, evening, morning, afternoon, weekend, holiday, whatever you have going on. Enjoy it. All right. And we'll talk to you next time right here on Story and Craft.
That's it for this episode of Story and Craft. Join Mark next week for more conversation right here on Story and Craft. Story and Craft is a presentation of Mark Preston Productions, LLC. Executive producer is Mark Preston. Associate producer is Zachary Holden. Please rate and review Story and Craft on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. You can subscribe to show updates and stay in the know. Just head to storyandcraftpod.com and sign up for the newsletter. I'm Emma Dillon. See you next time, and remember, keep telling your story. Come on.